Welcome to another edition of Trucking with ProMiles podcast. I'm joined, as always, by the coolest cat in the trucking industry, Mr. Tony Stronchek. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Mr. Tony.
How are you, Ed?
I'm good.
I'm mad at Steven.
I've had that thought before, but I'm good. How are you guys?
Great. We're doing good. Do you need anybody over there at SNRA to help? Because, you know, we need to get rid of Steven, and I don't know where to pawn him off to. So
I don't know if y'all want him back. There's no place for Steven anymore, but thanks for having me on. I appreciate this. I'm looking forward to it.
Padded walls is what my wife says I'm destined for. Ed Bernard, president of Ontario-based Precision Specialized Incorporated. We'll get to all the background, Ed, a little bit later, but just in general, kind of breaking news, some change in ownership and leadership within your world?
That is correct. Over the past year, there was some behind-the-scenes work, and we have been sold to Canada Cartage, and they took ownership roughly January 1st. So all the divisions stay the same, everything stays the same, but we just have a new owner at the top as opposed to Novacap, who was the owner for the previous 4 years.
You know, one of the benefits of getting to do this podcast is I get the opportunity to speak to, and in some cases, posthumously honor, truly some of the legends. I know we tease a lot, Ed, but I count you now amongst those small handful of true leaders in the specialized transportation industry. And in a recent article, you mentioned the David Lowrys, the Alan Barnharts, and others, but I want to start with Jay Faladori, who we had a chance to honor here recently. He was definitely a trendsetter, a pillar in our industry. Was he not someone that you and others looked up to?
One of the main people that I looked up to when I first joined the SCNRA, Jay was always eager to speak to you about anything family, work, projects they were doing. But he had time for everybody. And for myself, I remember, 13, 14 years ago, I think he was still at Landstar at the time, and we talked then, and he always had time for me, and he showed me how you should be interactive in your meetings. That was one big thing, and he was just a really nice guy, good family guy. Miss him dearly.
Absolutely. Ed, for those of you that don't know, the first, I shouldn't say foreign-born because SCNRA is a global association, but the first president and chairman outside of the United States in the 75, 80-year history of this humongous trade association, which is quite an honor in itself. We'll talk SCNRA, we'll talk trucking issues and all of those things as we go along, particularly Ed's unique place in this industry in being very, very expert in moving cross-border, Canada, U.S., some Mexico, as I understand. Look forward to hearing your issues and challenges in those areas as we move along. But let's go back to the beginning, Ed Bernard. Tony and I always respect the hell out of leaders like you in this industry who literally started on the ground floor, the most important job in trucking, I think we all agree, and that is driving itself. Tell us about your beginning and your father's influence.
My father was a big influence growing up. My father did a lot of different jobs, but the one he did the most was driving a truck from gravel truck to drywall. So I was around it my whole life. I used to go with him in early mornings and dump trucks. We'd leave Prince Edward Island, where I grew up, to go over to Moncton, and he'd pick up a load of gravel and come back. So I was embedded in it for quite a while. So whenever the opportunity came along, I kind of worked in the same field. But my father was a big influence in how I got into the trucking industry, if you will. We hauled garbage together cross border from Ontario to Michigan. And then we hauled flatbeds together, tanker trucks together. So we kind of stayed in the same, even with the same company at some point. And to the point where when I stopped driving to buy more trucks, my father was still working with me driving one of my trucks. And he just recently, probably 73 or 74, he finally retired from driving. So he misses it, but he was a big influence on how I got into this.
But before you made that final decision, that fateful decision, and the rest is history, as they say, in terms of your success in trucking, you seriously considered the Royal Mounted Police?
I did. I was going to be David Caruso.
That's scary.
I think there's a problem. So I was going to be a CSI. I love that. But I did. I went to University of St. Mary's University in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and I was in criminology. And I went to see the recruiter and everything was great. But unfortunately, back in the 80s, yes, I'm getting on in age now, Stephen, but back in the 80s was they were hiring for equality. So I was told that I would be at the very end of a long line of people in front of me that needed to be hired. It wasn't more about so much about qualifications, but it was the type of sex would be better. So females, people of color. So they were actually hiring for equality at the time. And they were honest. They said it could be 5 to 7 years before I'd have a legitimate shot at it. So.
So Ed, you decided not to be a Mountie, but to transport garbage from Canada to the U.S. I mean,
pretty much. Yeah.
A minute ago,
there's a lot of lines there.
There was some things in between there, Tony. Before I did that, I did work for Browning Ferris Industries at the time, BFI. I was driving trucks.
But Ed, go back. I had never knew that all of Canadians' garbage ends up in the U.S. I didn't know this. Is it still that way today? I mean,
is it still that way today?
Transported to the U.S.
Yeah, it is still that way today. No, Michigan landfills. You bury it. Michigan, it's not as bad as it used to be, but to be honest with you, back in the early 90s, we were taking garbage from the Greater Toronto Area into Michigan to just across Detroit. They had these massive landfills, and their price to take the garbage was cheaper than burying it in Ontario. So, and they paid us to take cardboard, that proverbial backhaul, cash money to take cardboard back from the United States, Michigan to Ontario. So it was very fruitful for a couple of years.
So we get your garbage and you get our boxes.
Exactly. Okay. That's exactly what happened.
Okay.
So, but it worked.
I had no idea. I mean, there's amazing things that come from Canada. We got Ed coming from Canada. We got garbage coming from Canada. We got Ryan Reynolds, you know, Deadpool. He's from Canada. I mean, think about it. What else can we get from Canada?
Whiskey, Crown Royal, real beer, not Bud Light.
There you go.
Before we get into a lot of crazy, wild issues and such, just take a minute and walk us through the Precision years and tell us about Precision and the incredible growth you've had.
Again, back when I started, I drove all manners of trailers and trucks, and I loved it. It was great being your own boss, and it just continued to grow. And I can remember vividly arguing with my dispatcher at the time, who was telling me what this load paid, and I said I could find better freight on a load board, and that's how that started. So we had our own little company for a while, myself and another gentleman, which it was okay. We were doing good. And then my insurance agent, Linda Colgan, whom you've met, Stephen, she's insured every truck I've ever owned since 1994. There's never been another insurance broker in my life in terms of commercial equipment. She introduced me to some other people, and I joined forces with them back in 2009, I think it was, and they were called Precision Truck Lines. And from there, Precision Specialized Division was born. And we did that for about 10 years, and we had some good growth, and then had an opportunity to take myself and the specialized fleet and divest it from Precision Truck Lines and move to GTI, which we did in 2019. And the GTI family, we had a deal with them. It worked really well for us. We've grown significantly. I've learned a lot the last 4 years with them. And again, the whole GTI group, which consists of GTI Roll, GTI USA, Jetco, Nomad, GTI Canada was one group owned by a private equity firm called Novacap. And they sold, and the deal was finalized December 28th or December 29th. And we joined Canada Cartage, and we're looking forward to the next chapter. And they're a big company. Canada Cartage is asset-based, over 4,000 units, but they're a for-hire carrier in terms of they will use their equipment to work for large grocery stores, liquor stores. They provide the fleet, so they're a private fleet operator for many different businesses and very good at what they do. So very large company.
And tell us what you haul in Canada and the United States and beyond. I know you haul the big, heavy stuff. You got a trophy up there, and I know you got five or six others in the other room for your big, impressive mega moves. But what is Precision known for in North America?
We've become more primarily project-based, but we also have open deck. So the legal loads, step decks, roll tights, double drops, mini decks, extendable trailers, and we haul pretty much everything. Our meat and potatoes has always been open deck. So that's how we got started. And that's what we still do, from LTL loads, legal loads, intra-Canada, across the border, US, Canada, Canada, US. We do a lot of specialized work for a lot of specialized clients. And we still operate to that today. I don't get involved as much in the operations I used to. I kind of think more about tomorrow's freight and the projects that we have coming down the pipeline. So we do a lot of work with manufacturers who want to move 10 loads or 50 loads, and they could be crazy sizes, and they want to make sure they can get it done. So we get involved early to make sure that's exactly what they can do and what it's going to cost them to do, as opposed to the people who build these great pieces of equipment and they want to move them, and they're shocked that the price is 300% more than what they expected because they weren't aware of all the parameters that go into moving that kind of material.
Do you miss that, Ed? I mean, now that you're at the executive level you're at, always having to look forward and such, do you miss getting your hands dirty a little bit and getting in the heat of those projects?
I still get involved with a couple of them. I do miss the ease of being responsible for one project. It's kind of like driving, Stephen. Like occasionally, I haven't done it in a while, but occasionally I've taken a truck. Typically, they're new. I'll take it for a test drive or the trailer, and you know, you turn your phone off, and it's like no one's going to bother you for the day. All you've got to do is keep it between the lines, follow the rules and regulations of your permit, and drive the truck. And doing that on a project's the same thing. Like I still go out in the night moves. I'll still project manage some of the bigger loads. And it's really cool when you have 150 contractors all involved in moving something that's 24 wide, 24 high. And you've got all these things that are happening, and it's the middle of the night, and you're just making sure everything's going to work well. It's still kind of fun doing that every once in a while, for sure.
And in your role now and in past years, without giving away all your secrets, what does an executive like yours spend their time as you're looking ahead down the road 6 months and in a year? What are the key indicators you're looking for? New markets?
Definitely pipeline. That's one. And SPO from Bechtel. Spolgerik and I had a conversation about this, and he loves my analogy of bamboo, and that's really what it is. I like to get involved in things that are a little more difficult. They may not produce any fruit or any crops right now, but they will next year or the year after. So that's kind of where I kind of spend my time. That, and of course, still looking at P&L statements and trying to make sure that we're keeping the lights on and upgrading equipment where we can. But it's a completely different animal now than it was 5 or 10 years ago, as I'm sure everyone has told you. Things just seem a little bit more difficult now than they used to be in this industry or racket.
Sounds like you, Tony, looking ahead a year, two, 3 years down the road. You can relate to that.
Definitely. It's difficult. Very difficult, but fun. It's
and
nice
painful
to work
sometimes
something
financially, right?
Oh, very painful. But Ed, tell me more about Ed. You know, what do you like to do when you're not working?
I like to work. Been traveling a little more lately. I've been trying to do that. So taking vacation time and trying to turn it off for a little while. Love playing golf with some good friends. But we love traveling. We try to do a big trip every year or every other year. We'll go for 2 weeks, which is always nice. I never actually had a 2 week vacation until maybe 4 or 5 years ago, where it's actually 2 weeks in a row, not just 2 weeks spread out over a couple of months. And it's a game changer. when you start to experience it. Now you go, God, I can't wait to do that again. But love spending time with my family, my two daughters and my two sons. I don't know if Stephen, I think I might as well Stephen, but I'm going to be a grandfather for the first time in April and June because my daughters like to do everything together. So they're doing that now. I told them to wait until I was 55 to have grandchildren. And I'm not sure if they planned it that way, but that's the way it's turning out. So a lot of family time, a lot of baseball games where we love going to Blue Jays games. I don't really love going to Leaf games because we don't tend to win much, but it's still fun to go. But yeah, hockey, golf, family time, and some travel. That's a good thing to do. And go, of course, going back to Prince Edward Island to see. Well, you know, a little bit of scotch and bourbon once in a while. But yeah, trying to spend more time in Prince Edward Island too. So. No, he's not.
Tony, he's fibbing a little bit. I've had the pleasure to be around Ed occasionally when he's on vacation. And like you, he's got the phone working and working jobs all throughout his vacation. So
taking a vacation for 2 weeks is nice. I mean, I took a whole month and we went to an RV park that was right on the lake. Just not my lake that I live at, but the next one over, so we can literally be away from home, even though it was 3 miles. And every day I had to move from one spot to another spot. It's the only way I could stay there for the whole time. And my wife broke her foot the day before we had to leave. So I had to pack the RV. I had to do everything by myself. And she's instructing me back and forth. Now do this. Did you do this? Calm down. Just wait. Give me a minute. I got to go pee. I'll be right back, you know, and just, it was a crazy month. I was so busy. Everything broke from our water line in the RV busted. So I had to go get another pump. And I mean, just this thing sat for years. So we, you know, let's get prepared. It was entertaining, but it was really nice because we didn't have a cell phone coverage there. We couldn't get those phone calls. And so I did, I spent the entire time stressed, tearing things up. We had a pontoon boat that the batteries went dead. So I took the batteries out, charged them. And when I put them back in, well, I put the battery post on backwards because it's got this converter and all this stuff that I didn't realize what color was really for what, the way that was set up. So then I fried the thing, which now I don't know if I'm ever going to get it to run again. But we did have a lot of fun. But getting away from business, getting away from trucking, getting away from, you know, the diesel, getting away from that kind of dynamics just to sit back and relax. You don't get that at work. You can't get that at work. I mean, not when you're hauling big freight like that. You're always got your butt tight and hoping and praying that we're going to make it or not. You know, so, I mean, those 2 weeks must have been really, really special to be able to get away from that.
It's a good spot to go. But again, you know, you think your phone's off. And I've told Stephen the story before. We're on a catamaran in Greece on the Aegean Sea and or the other sea. It's one or the other. I always forget. It's called one, but they had the most amazing Wi-Fi. So I actually had a Teams call. Well, I had to have a Teams call. One day I had a Teams call in the morning with the time change and everything. But the signal was better than I've ever seen in any hotel or my office. The Wi-Fi was amazing, right? They had the best Starlink ever on the top of this mast thing. You just turn the phone off and leave it in the room. That's kind of how you got to do it nowadays because you're always traceable. They say you're not, but you can always be traceable if you want to be.
Well, if you do like we do with our employees, they all get tagged when they start. So I know where they're at all times of the day.
Right here.
Yeah.
Little chip right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I've been with Steven in many places, so I'm not sure if I envy that position that you're in. So.
Yeah.
And the fact that I did not get an invite to that Greek vacation is still not smarting with me 5 years later at all. All right. Truck driving. Your dad was a truck driver. You looked up to him. You respected him. You were a truck driver. ProMiles is all about truck drivers, the backbone of our industry. Ed, tell us something either from you or your father's experience or your experiences now with your drivers that maybe some of us don't know about truck drivers, their life, their challenges.
It takes a special kind of guy or girl to do that job. You've got to be okay by yourself, right? So I think now, and again, 55, back then, I remember, you know, you buy your first cell phone, it was a bag phone. You plug it into a cigarette lighter adapter, you had that. But the one thing I really knew at the time is you have to be okay to manage your own time and be by yourself without talking to people all the time. Nowadays, back then we're talking to CB radio, which was a main form of communication, which is almost gone by the wayside today. You take a drive in a truck today, you hear nothing on that thing. It's crazy to me. That's the biggest single change I've seen with the evolution of the cell phone and communication. You know, you see the drivers when you drive, they have the headset on and they'll be talking to family members or something, I'm sure, or friends all day long. Right? That's kind of what we expect to see nowadays. So, but being able to manage your time and take care of yourself when you're out on the road for that amount of time. We still have drivers today that like to be gone for 6 weeks. We have guys that want to be home every weekend. So it's a very different mix of people. And it's sometimes I think it's easier for me to forget where I started and what they have to deal with today because, you know, you get jaded. And it's been so long since I've done it that way that, you know, you focus on what's important. But what is important? You want to make sure your guys are happy and safe. You want them to go home to your family. So yeah. I know that's how I did it. Then that's what I wanted to do. But for me, yeah, truck drivers like to be home too, do their thing. I was blessed being able to travel with my dad a lot. We were separate trucks, obviously, but we had some interesting times. My dad was actually in New Jersey. You know, everyone remembers where they were in 9/11, but my father was actually in New Jersey on 95 going north when it went down and seen it. So there's a lot of things when you think back. So we've talked about it every once in a while. We'll talk about things we've done or, you know, the ice storm in Manitoba, North Dakota back in the 90s where we were loaded sitting on Interstate 29, not moving. And the wind was literally pushing the truck sideways. That's how slick the roads were. That's how slippery everything was. Just the wind was pushing that truck completely off the road towards the ditch. So there's a lot of good memories like that. But everything's on camera now, Stephen.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to talk technology.
I think the biggest thing is to try and not be so jaded. I get a little jaded about the differences between 25 years ago, 30 years ago, and what we're doing today. You know, it's a much different world and harder, I think, for everybody in trucking.
Besides the skill sets you just mentioned, how do you know after the first 6 months or 10 months of a new driver's career if he or she really has the stuff to make it for an entire career or not? What are you looking for?
Attention to detail. I think we have a really good pay package for our guys and we have some really good guys. And over the years, we've had a lot of really good guys. We've had guys leave for a manner of reasons. They went on to something better or they came off the road. But I think attention to detail and, you know, they got to be at a certain place, a certain time, making sure they read their permits, do their paperwork, you know, just everything that's clean and you really have no issues with. Everyone's going to make mistakes, right? I make mistakes, staff makes mistakes, drivers make mistakes. So you have to be prepared for that mistake, but it's owning up to it and say, yeah, you know what? I messed that up. I'm going to do that better next time. Or I didn't get my paperwork to you on time. I know you've got a deadline to make payroll. Or your permits, I should have signed the bill of lading properly. When they do all that right and they operate well and they do everything they're supposed to do, you can usually tell pretty quick in 6 to 12 months, usually by then, if that path is being followed correctly.
You mentioned technology, ELDs, cameras, onboard navigation, et cetera, et cetera. Talk, Ed, about the dynamic between the drivers and you folks in management as these technologies have evolved and escalated. Is it smooth sailing at all times between the drivers and management and this technology? Is it getting better?
No, I wouldn't say it's getting, I think it's getting better now than it was when cameras first started coming in. Nobody wanted a camera on them, especially driver facing camera. Right. Which I get. And to this day, we still don't have all cameras facing the driver. So outwards, yes, all of them. every single truck. That's just an insurance thing. And you know it's going to happen eventually, but it's just a, you know, cover your ass kind of day. I'm hoping I'm allowed to say ass, by the way. And if I'm not, I apologize in advance. But that's what it's come to, right? That's what it's come to is everyone, the minute claims, incidents, everything's just so real time now that the minute that happens, you get a notification or a hard braking, you know, you get notice on our ISAC system. Everything gets downloaded. Everything's done right away because you're just waiting for something bad to happen or someone to sue you or something like that. So the way we explain it is that we want to make sure that we're able to take care of you, the driver, your family, and us. And to do that, we need this technology because everyone else has it. And God help you if you don't have it and they do, especially if someone's involved in an incident and they have all this camera and video to show what happened and we have nothing. Even if you're right, you have nothing. You're already starting off on the wrong foot. So it's better now than it was 5 years ago. Put it that way.
Ed, I got a question. When was the first time you've backed into, ran over, or hit something in a truck? When was the first time?
Wow. I was driving for BFI. I had a straight truck, a roll-off vehicle with a pop trailer behind me. So I had two 40-foot yard containers. First incident I ever had. And I was traveling on the QEW heading to Niagara Falls, New York, with another load of garbage for the States. Tony, I apologize, but that's where I was going. And I was just through the city of Hamilton. I heard this noise, and the suspension on the pop trailer broke, snapped, and dropped. And when it dropped, the legs of the container got into the tires on the back of the pop trailer and jerked it, snapped all the chains, and that container went right off the back of the trailer onto the highway, hit the highway, rolled. I'm watching it in the mirror. It's like I thought I was dreaming. And it rolled in towards the ditch, went down into the ditch, plowing dirt everywhere. And I pulled over and I put my floor raise on and I called dispatch and called the cops. We went back there. And an hour and a half later, still no cops showed up. One of my coworkers showed up and was able to pick the container up, put it on his truck. We had a wrecker take the pup trailer and took it off. The cops never showed up and we were gone. In about 2 hours total, but it scared the Jesus out of me. So all right. That was.
Can you tell us what date that was? And we're going to make sure we'll let them know what happened to the dirt.
I cannot recollect or confirm the date.
That happened,
unfortunately. Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Well, we all do it, but you know the question is what did your dad say?
He was working the same company, same time. He said. Pretty sure we blame the mechanic in that instance. But I, you know, did I miss it in the pre-trip? Maybe I did, but yeah.
Yeah.
That was
so Ed, with all those guys that drive for you that, you know, hopefully some of them are listening to this. And if they are, just know that Ed can't get that pissed at you for making a mistake. He's done it too. Nah. That makes a good leader. The leaders that have been there, done that, had the issues. And they understand when you have issues. They, you know, that's the thing about owner-operators and guys trying to get on their own. And then they go drive for somebody else. They're scared to death. They're scared to make the wrong thing, wrong decision. Because trust me, you know, nick on their insurance is going to hurt them bad when they have a lot of trucks. And, you know, but at the same time, Ed, it's nice and very refreshing to listen to people that's been there, that started, you know, hauling garbage, you know, and now they're running things. And, you know, to have management that gets that versus having management that was brought in because it's a big company, they got acquired by some venture capitalist group. So now you got these suit and tie guys coming in and telling you how to run trucks. You know, they don't understand trucking. They don't understand the dilemmas and the challenges that they go through every day. All they care about is that EBITDA number, that profit margin, that profitability. But at the end of the day, if you ain't got those drivers driving those trucks, you don't have a business. And so you need good drivers. You need drivers that, when they make a mistake, they live up to it and they learn from it. And that's all you're looking for.
Let's spend a couple minutes. Good fact. Good facts.
On the Specialized Carriers and Rigging Association, only because, Ed, I know how important that is in your professional and personal life. The SCNRA, for those few that don't know in our industry, the trade association for specialized carriers worldwide. Ed, as we mentioned before, is the first in the 75-80-year history of the association, born and raised outside of the United States, to be elected chairman and president. Probably one, if not the youngest president, I believe. Certainly from my experience, you ascended the ladders more quickly than anybody I know of. Possibly one of the youngest to ever win the prestigious job of the year. You've got five or six of those. I think your record is undefeated or nearly undefeated.
We've lost once. We lost once. We deserved to lose. That was a good job.
You're human.
It was a good job.
You're human.
Absolutely.
But besides all that, the committee meetings, the wonderful sessions led by your staff and former staff, all kidding aside, I know what the answer to this is, but what's most important and of value to Ed Bernard and Precision about being a member of SCNRA?
You're going to know I'm going to say relationships. Relationships and friendships made over the past almost 15 years. I remember the first meeting in Florida. I went just because I was there for another meeting to see a client, and popped in because I had never been. We had been a member for a year or two, and I was blown away by the effort put in by the group of people, the fellow members and the staff, in making sure that our needs with regard to our businesses were looked after, and the things that you could learn from it. I was just impressed how easy everyone talked to each other. So that was about 14 years ago, and I haven't missed a symposium or an annual conference or since then. I've been at all of those meetings, but you learn so much from it in terms of what's good for your business, safety factors, insurance. And again, for me, it was friendships and relationships. We actually generate and have generated a significant amount of revenue over the years by just letting people know where you're from. And a lot of the U.S. people that I know and U.S. companies don't operate in Canada or don't operate in Ontario or just are too busy to do so or don't want to go there. And, you know, they call us. And I know that if we need help in the States or crossing the border, we've used Northwest Logistics a bunch of times. They're out of Oklahoma, Barnhart, in many different areas we've used down here for helping us get over railway tracks. But as someone to call, like Jay Faladori, you know, David Lowry, Paul, Mike Poppy, so many people you can call just to get experience or help or assistance from them. It's been monumental, the benefits that we've seen from it over the past 10 years, 12 years. For sure.
Yeah, it's not all about this, the money, but I always tried to impress upon carriers who were not members who would look at the registration fees and the membership fees. And I said, my God, talk to some people like Ed Bernard and Faladori's and Lowry's, and they will tell you of the thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars that they have reaped directly and indirectly from the networking and the friendships. Absolutely. Before we run out of time, Ed, there's so many issues that you guys lead on nationwide, but I know one near and dear to your heart and probably a few four-letter words may or may not slip out of your mouth. Vertical clearances, overhead structures. Talk to Tony and I in the audience about your concerns and frustrations about that subject in North America.
Lack of information, incorrect information. It is crazy to me in today's world that some jurisdictions will not give us the information, will not tell us the information, and we have to go out and survey over and over again. And, you know, we've been to a couple of places, and I'm not going to name any states, but where they say you can't travel at 15-6 high on this road. So they're going to send us off on county roads and, you know, the craziest route that you've ever seen to get back to the same point later. And when you survey it, you find out that we had a pole up and didn't touch a single thing at 15-11. But you won't let us travel at 15-6. I mean, you should have at least a 3-inch buffer, or maybe they want a 6-inch buffer. But we all know that if you're traveling at the speed you're supposed to be traveling at with a superload, you're not going to get a 6-inch bounce on an interstate or a major highway that should come in contact with any structure. And the amount of time, money, and aggravation saved by staying on the biggest highway possible and mitigating the risk as well. That would just be awesome. keep us on the roads we need to be on. So I know that we've asked many states and provinces to give us some, you know, what are your bridge heights? And in a lot of cases, we don't get an answer back. Some do, right? And some have it posted. Saskatchewan has, for example, it's a great resource. You go to the Saskatchewan Trucking website. They have the bridge structures, you know, it's there. Every single structure in the province is listed. Doesn't matter what road you're on. They have the height. So you do your own route planning that way, right? Illinois is another good one. I mean, Illinois, you know, God love Gino Kohler because he's one of my favorite people in this business. But that state has got to be the best state to operate in for permits. I mean, I can do a super load in Illinois and get an answer back. And they have a lot of roads in Illinois, right? I mean, it's crazy how much roads there are in Illinois compared to Ontario, for example. But it's just so easy to manipulate where you want to go based on what they provide in their permit service and in their permit application that you do for that. It is amazing to me how easy that one is. And a lot of them others like that. And I mean, anything that ProMiles works with is good too. Not to give a shout out, you don't need it, but it's a very good system that we all need to be aware of, that input in, input out.
So you kind of touched on it, but what specifically are you and SCNRA looking for from the government sector with regards to vertical clearances? I heard you say, just tell us what those clearances are, but attach a few more bullet points to that if you could wave a magic wand.
If you're going to tell us we don't clear a route, tell us what that is. Because as the carrier, we also will add our own buffer, as we all do. Because you don't want to go into a state with just not enough there. So if we're adding a buffer and you're adding a buffer, we might have 10 inches or 12 inches of clearance. We're not sure. Tell us why we can't go into this structure, right? What's the problem with it? It comes in contact as well with the weights where you fail bridge sometimes. They'll say, well, this route doesn't clear. Well, why doesn't it clear? It's just about getting information back. We want to be able to do the best route that we can, the safest route that we can, and obviously sometimes the shortest route that we can. But obviously, if you've got a super load or you know, any permitted load, you want to take the best route for the truck, which is a combination of both. So if we know that you've paved that road last year or 2 years ago and you added 7 inches of asphalt to it, obviously the clearance is different. It would just be nice if they had the correct information to share with the carriers looking to travel through that state. That's what it really comes down to, Stephen, is give us the right information on what those clearances are. It's for everybody's best interest.
You mentioned weight. Let's pivot there real quick. Tony's company does a lot of work with ash tow, particularly on weights. We've told that story before. We're the prime consultant for ash tow on their bridge rating, which ends up ultimately determining whether or not your overweight loads are going to move or where they're going to move in a particular state. And Tony, you or actually your partner, I think, hosted ash tow at our Bridge City office here recently. And I don't want to say too much, but the subject of weight actually came up. And you know, Ed, for years, we banged our head against the wall on harmonizing weight allowances nationwide. You mentioned Illinois, one of the most wonderfully liberal states in the country, usually with regards to weight. But how wonderful it would be, Ed, if you didn't have to mix and match your equipment the way you have to do traveling around North America for weight. What are your biggest challenges right now?
Deteriorating infrastructure is a huge challenge facing everybody. They had issues in Montana last year where loads that we used to do wouldn't pass anymore because the bridge got old or it's a different formula. It's had the same problems in Saskatchewan. We're having the same problems in Ontario as well. Making our footprint longer is another thing that we're seeing a lot of, where you've got a lot of space. Your configuration is so long now just to get the weight sprinted over the bridge, but you get to another load jurisdiction, and why do you have this stretched out so long when you can shorten it up? So that's just adding more complications to different configurations you were speaking about. structures, putting money back into our infrastructure, is vitally important to the economy of the United States and Canada. We're not, and I don't know how they do the road tax. I don't know how they work the internals of the tax money that comes in. But we know one thing is that it's not getting any better. And if it doesn't get any better now, and we're just not going to see any future in how the routing has to go, we're seeing more and more rail jobs than I've ever seen in my life right now. Where a simple 150,000 pound load, which the great Doug Ball would tell us is the meat and potatoes of this industry, is those 13 axle and 11 axle load. You knew I was going to mention him at some point, Stephen. Those loads are vital to everything that we do. And there's just so many complications on how we route them now, where we have to avoid states, avoid complete states, because we can't get through that way because it's failing everywhere. So weight is a huge factor related to infrastructure that we're all facing.
Ed, something that's interesting, because, you know, we do work with the states and the jurisdictions, and I've been working with the province in Canada since 94. We do all the fuel tax up there, and you mentioned taxes. One of the things that has really been shaken up here in the U.S. for the last 15 to 20 years is we do not collect enough tax to repair our infrastructure, our roads. We don't. We're, you know, I think the last was, you know, so many billions in debt, and all we do is take it out of the general fund. That's how we make it up. But trucks are getting higher MPGs, so they're not buying as much fuel. You can get a truck going 8 miles, a gallon, and you look at that trip, and he can go through three states before buying fuel. And so the states have always had a challenge how to do this, and that's what IFTA came along. You know, let's get together and figure out where you burn it all. Let's do all this. But, dude, electronic vehicles, you know, LNG, all these different propelled vehicle types, the governments are freaking out because their tax revenue is getting less and less and less. But these electric vehicles, including, you know, my daughter has a Tesla, you know, it's electric. She gets to go charge at home. She charges at a superstation and gets charged pretty quick. And because when she bought it, she ordered it early, she gets lifetime electricity. So she pays nothing to move that vehicle. But she weighs more in that car than I do in our car. And so the government, and you better watch really closely, because I'm on many boards, and we've been working with the Federal Highway Administration, different groups, about how do we generate enough money to put into this infrastructure. And so if you looked, Connecticut last year came out with a mile tax, the first jurisdiction to add a mile tax to their whole scheme of how they're going to collect. And then you had the next state, you had Pennsylvania. Now, Pennsylvania is doing things based on your electric vehicle and how much power you're actually using. So the complication of how to mix and match this is just getting complicated. And we're going to go right back to filing all these reports with all these different jurisdictions, you know. But at the end of the day, how do you feel about, you know, having a report to the government? This is not only where my miles went, but here's where I actually went in the jurisdictions. This is the towns I went through, the parishes, the townships, the villages. Why? Because they all need money to pay the roads. And so, you know, in the past, they didn't care about cars. Heck, cars always needed more fuel, and they're going to stop multiple times. And, you know, we can't make cars do this. Well, that's exactly what they're talking about. They're talking about every vehicle in this country, in North America, having to calculate their taxes based on their movements. So now they're going to be charged so much for every little mile or kilometer they move. But somebody's got to keep track of this. Somebody's got to connect those dots. And then what happens when those dots don't get collected? Like this last year in Canada, ELD became mandated in 23. And I'm sure that changed a lot of things. You know, you didn't have to have it before, but you watched the U.S. and we had to have it sooner. So what do you think of ELD? What do you think of that mandate? Do you think it was a good mandate? Do you think it's something that's going to help safety? Or do you think they're digging a little too deep into your personal information, and they shouldn't see where you're at? They shouldn't care where your drivers are going. It's none of their business. What do you
I know Ed's views. Ed, permission to speak freely. Let it all out here.
Yeah.
I will tell you that ELDs make our office and our safety compliance manager's jobs very easy, because you don't have to worry about matching your logbook for an inspection, or if they're coming to do an audit. It makes it very, very easy. It makes it easy to pay them. You don't have to worry about any tickets, right? And mostly it, what it's turned into is drivers get paid by the day, right? But did it translate to us being able to charge more money? Because we could run more miles then. We all know that. You could, you know, you could fudge it here, fudge it there. Not fudge it, but if you have a 15-minute rest break and you only stop for 6 minutes or 7 minutes, and you do that 3 or 4 times, you can get an hour back somewhere. You can't do that anymore. So, you know, I know we didn't make any morning break because of ELDs, and we had to put them in. I think now that I'm used to them, it's probably a good thing. It makes everybody a little bit safer. It's a lot easier to track, right? Electric vehicles, yeah, that's, you'd have to do another 2-hour show, and then it'd just be mostly me swearing and laughing because I was at the Montreal Weights and Measures meeting. Steven's been to one. Yeah. Steven's seen me in action there, where I asked the same thing. Now they want to give grants to all these companies to build these electric trucks when we can't fix our damn roads. I don't care how good your truck is. You can't fix your roads. You can't fix today's issue. Oh, by the way, where are you going to charge all these vehicles? I think Canada's, I seen something, our wonderful prime minister, tongue in cheek here, guys, our wonderful prime minister said by 2035, they want to have all electric vehicles. Well, I know that if every vehicle in my neighborhood had to charge, I know our infrastructure would just blow up because there's not enough power there to support all that. So I think it's a great idea for the future. I just want to know how we're going to get there because I don't see anything that's plausible that makes sense.
Well, here's the nice thing is, you know, I've been in electric vehicles and I watch what they do, and you put them on this, you know, self-driving mode and all these things. Mm. Do you know they don't understand cones could be different shapes other than the triangle shape? I mean, and that was a rough time to learn that when the car didn't turn and just went right through the cones. The other thing that's interesting here is it doesn't see everything like your human eyes do. It doesn't pre-plan on things as well as the human can do, in my opinion. However, sure, it's better and faster at certain parts, but you're relying on it to be able to know that it sees everything. And so having potholes in that road, having damaging to that truck that's about to happen, and that once that hits that pothole, if it's deep enough, where do they put the batteries? Right underneath, right? Because that's where it's going to hold it down. It's going to weigh it. Well, now what's going to hit that pothole? The batteries. Now you're leaking acid down the road, and little Sally's walking across the street, you know, with her dog, and her dog's sitting there licking acid off the ground off of that truck. So you're right. If the roads aren't good, who gives a shit about what pushes that truck if the truck can't make it? And you're right. We've got a lot of infrastructure issues in North America, a lot. And I will tell you, when we got our last copy of the Bridge Inventory Database that came on a big tape reel that was like this big, and we had a pair of company pull it off, and you look at the maintenance on these bridges, when the last time they were seen, when's the last time they physically had somebody touch them, it will scare the living crap out of you. And, you know, and I know how old I am. I was born in 1970. These overpasses here in Colorado that I live at were built in 1970. I'm breaking down. I'm pretty damn sure they're breaking down too by now. But you know what? They don't always put road signs up there either for us. They don't put a sign saying it's 16 feet, 2 inches. No, you know why? Oh, it's big enough. It's tall enough. And if it's that tall, we don't need a sign. Well, why don't you at least put a sign there? Well, we don't have the funds to maintain and keep those signs up to date all the time. Why? Because we can't pay the company to do it. Well, who in Colorado does that? Colorado, they own the company that does the signs. So you would think they would figure these things out. It's the right hand not knowing what the left hand really needs. It's the public and private industry getting together and actually having these conversations. That is what SNRA is about. SNRA takes all these DOT guys, okay, take all the industry guys, and they throw them together at a place and say, good luck. You know, don't nobody go to jail over this, but y'all have some serious conversations. And there's been some really good conversations because these state guys, nothing against you, Stephen, because you was a state guy, but these state guys are human beings too. They care about things. They care about damn those straight drivers. Mm-hmm. And when we work with states, we work with their state associations at the same time when we build systems. Why? Because you need to listen to the industry. You need to listen what their needs are. But guess what, Ed? There's so much money, and they don't have enough as it is to fix what we got. And now they're trying to throw a lot more at it and do more things. I mean, we've put millions in automating permits to make them faster, more accurate, right? But we still have these bridges collapsing with people on it and under it. Mm-hmm. You know, we still have infrastructure that if just a little tender love and care could be done to it in 10, 15, 20 years from now, those fancy vehicles that are going to cost us so much money, we'll be able to get back and forth a lot easier. But it's just going to get worse because we're going to make things bigger. We're going to make it haul more, you know, we're going to make it worse. So if we can't do it today, how the hell are we going to do this 20 years from now? How will this world move or be able to move freight if we can't even fix our potholes? Say, hell, Domino's Pizza's commercial, they're fixing potholes now. We're that bad at doing it that a pizza delivery company has to say, I'm going to buy the trucks and I'm going to fix the roads because you guys won't fix it for our delivery guys. You know, and I think the only reason why they're doing it is because Domino's has that little electric vehicle that nobody's in that their pizzas go in and it actually drives to your house to deliver. They're just worried about it falling into that little hole and having to give free pizzas. But Ed, you're dead on. And you know what? It ain't easy for these states. I'm telling you, working with jurisdictions, they have only so much resource, so much money. Mm-hmm. And then when the government decides they're going to spend money on something that doesn't make a lot of sense, like what will this device do if I make you get sick with it? You know, I'm going to make this device and spend millions of dollars to do this because I'm going to use it in war. Well, instead of doing that, why don't you use that little bit and educate people, make them smarter, get them better educated when they get out there on how to drive this truck. You know, we were on a podcast with another group one day and was discussing, you know, how many people understand, Ed, your drivers and your fleet and that big load? All they do is they're cussing you every time they see you because slowing them down, you're in their way, and they want to herp and get around, you know. They don't respect you guys because they don't understand what you're doing to keep their lights on. That piece of equipment was going to an electrical pump house, and if it didn't get what it needed, that whole area was going to be without power this next spring. You know, you can't. You have to have it there. But they don't stop and wave and say, thanks. Thanks, Mr. Ed, for what y'all do. They don't, do they?
No, it's me, me, me. We all know that it's everything's now. There's a sense of entitlement in so many businesses and people these days where they just want everything now. I'm 25 years old. I want everything now. Please put it here. Thank you very much. That's right.
Well, I think we need to get close to wrapping up here. I've heard Megan in my ear giving me a headache, saying, "Dad." Dad, shut up, Dad. Real quick on infrastructure, my two cents worth. One of the greatest problems with our infrastructure is it's not sexy. I say that over and over again. And what I mean by that is we're in another crazy election season. They rank all these things that are top on voters' issues. And that's what makes the politicians talk about what they talk about. Rarely, if ever, will you see the word infrastructure on one of those lists with them. Although when you see economy, the three of us on this call know sure as hell that the economy is affected by the infrastructure, but it's not sexy. And politicians don't get a lot of warm, fuzzy feelings doing ribbon cuttings when they do a road overlay, right? That's not sexy for them when they're bringing money back home. But let's close out here, Ed. So much respect and love for you and all you guys do. Wrap up question. What pisses you off the most about this whole industry right now? Might be something you've mentioned, maybe not, but what really, really honks Ed Bernard off on a day in, day out basis? And then follow that up with what is the most gratifying thing to Ed Bernard about this crazy industry?
The most annoying, that pisses me off the most is we know that we need trucks on the road. We know that they're delivering what everybody needs and wants and requires for life. But even though we know all that, we don't try to assist or make things easier. And that can lead to a great many things, but just the sheer illogical lunacy of lawsuits, for example, because I'm going through one now, is it doesn't matter how right you are, because some lawyer wants to put you in front of a jury to get sympathy for somebody who was 100% wrong. So she can get paid. He can take half of the money that he wins and he goes on to the next one. If you want to talk about our industry in a bubble, we can't even fix that. We can't even stop that lunatic nuclear verdicts. I mean, if you're wrong, you're wrong. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. We will write a check, or the insurance company will write a check. But when you're not wrong and you still have to pay just because it's the lesser of two evils, in case you lose, we can't even fix that. Now think about all the wasted money there. So yeah, it's, considering we need everything from trucks that bring to everyone, your chairs, your food, yet we penalize it and make it as complicated as possible. And I don't see, like Tony said, I don't know how the hell you're going to do this in 20 years. It's a little debilitating at times when you look at it that way. How are we going to do this in 20 years? So, gratifying. Nowadays,
it makes you warm and fuzzy.
Well, when I get to talk to you, Stephen, and I see you on the screen with Tony, I mean, I can't get over this. This is awesome. But
big keep it coming.
big projects.
Go ahead.
Big projects. I think it's almost more family orientated for me now. On a personal, it's I'm gonna have two grandchildren. I can't wait for that. Getting together with family, I love. I think your perspective changes as you get older. But to keep it on the business side, being involved in a project that takes 3 years to come to fruition, okay, you were in on the planning and everything, and then you move it, and it's this incredible thing that you've done, and it's completed, and it's done, and it's like, wow, look what we did, right? That's pretty cool. But just, you know what, having a successful year, keeping the lights on, paying our bills, making sure there's some EBITDA, Tony, that's for you. Some EBITDA left for the people that, you know, expect you to make money, because there's expectations and requirements of all of us. That too. But on a business level, it's still that crazy stuff that said you can't do that. And then you do it.
Unlike most any other industry I've ever been around, the trucking industry, and I certainly count Tony as this as well, you guys at the heads of your companies in this industry, you guys have this blue collar family type of instinct, don't you, Ed, where your people, your employees, they're damn near family, aren't they? And you think about them, you worry about them, and you care about them every day.
I'm probably guilty of walking through the office saying, this is just like being at home. But that's commonly because somebody's done something they weren't supposed to do, just like your kids do. So there's that aspect of it too, where you do care a lot. You go, damn it, why did you do it that way? Like, I think the biggest thing we tell our staff is, especially the drivers, if you're going to make a decision that's going to hurt you, hurt the public, hurt somebody, hurt the load, or cost a bunch of money, call us before you do that. Let's talk about it. Right? I may not be the friendliest rah 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 guy, and I like to see some of the guys have been with me for over 10 years, and I love them all dearly. And all our guys do a great job. It's a hell of a hard job to do. And I got to do my part too, because sometimes I take it for granted. I'm absolutely guilty of that. I can be a little hard at times, but when their backs are against the wall, I will make sure that we're there to help them. We don't want to leave them hanging. We may be hard on them, but we still love them and for the job they do, and appreciate them and their families.
Amen. Tony, Megan says you get the last word, but 10 seconds.
Wow.
Ed, thanks for putting up with Steven. And if you guys at SCNR want him back, I will make a really good offer to pay you to take him back.
I've got little time left in my place. I'm going to be a past chairman, I think, on April. And then I've got to start doing stuff for Joel instead of the other way around. And I hope he hears this one day.
Tony all the time, I got four other companies pursuing me hotly. He needs to give me a raise. And then he says, what are those four companies pursuing you so hotly? And I said, my electric company, my utility company, my cell phone company. They're all after
me. Oh, yeah.
And he's always singing. He's always singing that song, you know, "Bad Bad Boys." You know, yeah. What you gonna do?
Yeah.
You know, he's just always just, doing that, running around.
And he can't sing around the streets of Houston. Just follow Ed around Houston for a few days. You'll see the bad boys.
There we go.
We thank you, Ed.
Thanks, guys. We get in
trouble.
Seeing you.
See you soon.
Yep. All right. See you guys.
All right. Thanks for joining, Ed.
All right.